Outkick the coverage live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
The man himself, Brady Quinn.
Always fun. That's been a great show so far. I'm just, look, you got the winning headliner lie. Not much else to say about that, at least in my regard. I am curious, though, to hear what you're going to be referring to. You know, wow. That's the beauty of this show. Sometimes your teases are so good. Even though we've got all our notes, even though we talk about what we want to talk about during the show, mm-hmm. I don't even know what the hell we're going to be talking about with the way all you right. tease.
Because for whatever reason, I have a pretty good memory. I can remember things. I don't know why.
You're like a damn elephant. That's what you are. Yeah.
Yeah. From the waist up. But here's the thing. I would just say this. The Atlanta Hawks pull off, quote unquote, the upset game one against the Milwaukee Bucks. And at some point, these are no longer upsets. I know what the betting line says, but this team's 6-2 on the road in the postseason. Right. They've shown the ability when games get tight late, they're just the better team. We've seen it in multiple series, whether it was against the Knicks, whether it was against the Sixers, now against the Milwaukee Bucks. Late in games, Atlanta just looks more comfortable than everybody else. And Trae Young was fantastic. 48 points. I don't know that people looked at him in the same way as they look at him now at the start of the postseason. I think they looked at him as very talented, a great scorer, but that was pretty much it. And he's just gone to another level in the postseason.
Yep.
And so here's what I would just like to bring up, because I saw all this and I kept my mouth shut because, you know, I was usually talking about the NFL, not the NBA. But I saw all this and I saw that the Atlanta Hawks were getting mocked by a lot of people, because if you remember, on draft day, the Atlanta Hawks traded the rights to Luka for Trae Young.
Right.
And the thought was, oh my God, well, Dallas got the better of that deal. I mean, what the hell was Atlanta thinking? They're going to regret that for the rest of their lives. Man, I'm not trying to say that I would rather have Trae more so than Luka, but I think we're at a point now in what we've seen that it's kind of even almost. You know, like I'm not saying that Trae Young's better than Luka, but I think the Atlanta Hawks are officially off the hook when it comes to that deal based on what we've seen from Trae Young in the postseason.
I would be willing to say that Trae Young, even as good as Luka is as a player, Trae Young still must-see TV. Like he is, you know, more fun to watch in the sense of how he goes about doing it. You know, he's the type of guy that's going to shoot a 50-foot three in a game. At least it feels like that. Like he doesn't mind pulling up from near half court and shooting one and being able to hit that shot. He also doesn't mind being able to, you know, fake an around the back pass and take it up to the hoop or throw an alley-oop off the backboard. Like those are all things in his repertoire that Luka really doesn't do. Luka's great at creating a shot. He's an unbelievable shooter and scorer in that regard. But I don't know that he has the same type of impact on his team and being able to elevate the rest of the players out around him like Trae Young can. Just because of the way he handles the ball, the way he's able to put his team in the right play. Nate McMillan talked a lot about that just over the course of this playoff so far, is they trust him to see the flow of the game, to see what's happening, who's hot, who's not, who they need to get more involved. And Trae Young takes the responsibility of all that.
Yeah.
For a young player in this league, I think you could make the case, you know, not only has this trade worked out for Atlanta, but maybe moving forward, he's probably the player that you're looking at saying there is no Robin to him being Batman on this team, at least in my opinion. You know, I think if you look at Dallas and you're like, okay, what do they need to do? They need more superstars to help out with Luka.
Yeah.
In order for them to win a championship, they need more superstars. Atlanta's now in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm not saying it's all Trae Young. They're a really good team. They have really good complementary players. But he just dropped 48 points in a conference finals game. That's like top five, top six all time. he's kind of carried this team in some ways, and he's must-see TV. So I'm going to go a step further and say I think Atlanta right now got the better of these, you know, of this trade, given where the NBA is at, and given his style of play.
Yeah, and look, and I don't think that's a crazy statement. But a year ago, like, people would have looked at you like you had three eyes and said, "No, what are you talking about?" I mean, Luka's one, you know, generational MVP type talent, and then you're just seeing Trae Young, and I do think there is something happened in that Knicks series because. He just relished the idea of being the villain. For whatever reason, I think that team took to that role differently than everybody else did. I mean, 6-2 on the road straight up in the playoffs is 6-2 on the road straight up in the playoffs. Like, you've been on NFL teams that have been in the postseason before. Like, road and home is a much different environment, right? I mean,
I would say forget the postseason, just even in the regular season. You know, you get in college and, you know, in college, again, you kind of relish it. You like the atmosphere and all that. It feels at times almost insurmountable in the NFL being able to do that, just in the regular season, let alone postseason, where it's a whole different element.
Yeah, I'm watching Trae Young. He's been fantastic. It's been really, really exciting, really entertaining basketball. And the Atlanta Hawks get it done. They've got a 1-0 series lead over the Milwaukee Bucks and are three wins away. Shocking enough, the Atlanta Hawks three wins away from going to the NBA Finals. Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox here on FSR. Now, we do have a game three coming up later on tonight. We did get a little bit of clarity, kind of. Chris Paul's going to be back. He is going to be back for the Phoenix Suns. Now, whether or not anybody's going to answer some questions about where the hell he's been, why it's taken so long, I'm not quite sure. There are some people that have even thrown out there that, well, maybe he wasn't vaccinated, and that's what this is. This, to me, feels like the NBA's got no real strong answer that wouldn't have a follow-up question as of, well, what do you mean or why? Like, this, something about this doesn't make sense. But nonetheless, Chris Paul's going to be back later tonight for the Phoenix Suns, Brady Quinn. Still confused.
I'm not going to get into all what's happening behind the scenes because we don't really know. Hopefully, Chris Paul can explain some of that, maybe. Or maybe the NBA is not going to let him. But again, reportedly, he was vaccinated. He supposedly had gotten COVID-19. And now we haven't really heard much about either what's going on behind the scenes, why he sat out so long, if he's vaccinated. I thought he's supposed to be good from all this. Apparently not. I get it. You know, COVID's been around now for less than 2 years. We're still trying to get a handle on how we want to handle this. But it's just odd to me that there's been such transparency when someone tests positive for this back when it first got here. Now when someone's vaccinated gets it, it's like he doesn't even exist for the first two games of the Western Conference Finals. It doesn't make any sense to me how the media or at least the NBA has handled Chris Paul. But nonetheless, they're up 2-0. He's coming back. But somehow Ty Lue and even Paul George, you said this, they like where they're at. I mean, this is where they lived the entire postseason for the LA Clippers. Being down 0-2 to Dallas, being down 0-2 to the Utah Jazz, now they find themselves again down 0-2. I think they like being the underdog, maybe. I don't think they like being the favorite.
Yeah, I think the Clippers have a legitimate gripe. I think they should be pissed off. I've been doing the past couple of days. I've been on AM 570 LA Sports. As most people call it, the blowtorch of Fox Sports Radio in Southern California. And I've been working with the great Fred Rogan. And listen, I every NBA insider or analyst we've talked to have all said, yeah, the Clippers have been have voiced their opinion on it, but nobody's really making much of it. I've always been under the impression that if you go 7 games in a series, you don't get the benefit of extra rest to start the next series. Okay, that because it took you longer to finish off your series, you usually come back 2 days later and you start your next series. Well, in the Eastern Conference, Atlanta and Milwaukee both went 7 games. Yet they had multiple days off before they started their series last night. The Suns and Clippers ended their series early, and they had to start the Clippers less than 48 hours after they finished off the Utah Jazz. How the hell does that make any sense? Like, if I'm the Clippers, I'm pissed. Like, how does that make any sense whatsoever? It doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea. I would imagine it might have something to do with the TV networks. You know, the broadcast partners who are going to play a little bit of a role, too, in scheduling when those games are going to occur. Given the ratings, and I know the ratings have come back this season for the NBA, but, you know, when you factor into COVID last year, you kind of throw it out the window because it's an outlier. If you go back to 2019, they're flat at best. Yeah. And I know they've had some moments where it's been better, but for the most part, ratings have been on the decline for the NBA. So I'm sure they're cognizant of that. And given how you don't have some of the favorites or the superstars that we had coming into it, they're most likely looking at it saying, what can be the best possible window for us to be able to get the most exposure right now, given who we've got playing in the postseason and given the fact that we need a ratings bump. We need to do all we can to preserve the chance of us having the biggest ratings we can right now, because that's something that I don't think the NBA wants to admit, but they are struggling in that. You know, again, this year's been better than last year, but if that's your basis for comparison, then I'm sorry, you've got this all wrong, because pretty much everything was down during COVID. There wasn't really anything outside the NFL that kind of hung on for a little bit. Everything was down. So you really got to go back to 2019 to compare it, and I do think that's part of this equation.
Do you want to know my theory as to what happened, why the Clippers were forced to turn around and play less than 48 hours after finishing off the Utah Jazz?
I'd love to hear this.
All right, this is a good one. Yeah. All right. I want to make sure everybody's listening. All right, so everybody, just whatever you're doing, tell anybody in the car next to you to shut their mouths. You know what? Anybody making loud noises outside, if somebody's working on their yard, or you got somebody's cleaning the pool, or the gardeners are there, like, just tell them to shut up. You got to hear this. Here's why I think the LA Clippers were forced to turn around less than 48 hours later, dealing with injuries, to begin their series after finishing off the Utah Jazz early. Because I think they were part of a bulk purchase, right? And that bulk purchase was the following. LeBron James went to the NBA and he said, hey, I'd like our trainer fired, but I understand I can't just purchase this stuff a la carte. So at the same time, I would like to also purchase the Clippers getting less than 48 hours in between series and having to start the very next round in Phoenix with no Kawhi Leonard and a banged up roster. What do you think about that? Bulk purchase, LeBron pulling the strings. How about that?
That one feels a little far-fetched. I'm not really sure I'm going to co-sign on that one. I'm just going to stay away from that all the way around.
What? No. Yeah. I mean, listen, all I'm doing is throwing out some ideas. I'm an idea guy. I'm throwing out some ideas. You want to say it's far-fetched? I don't think it's that far-fetched, you know? I mean, we're just, pulling strings behind the scenes.
Yeah, I want no part of this conversation. Okay. So this one's just a little out there for me. Usually I try to give you the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, I'm not feeling that right now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I think it had to have been the trainer's fault. The trainer. It was her fault that LeBron James got injured and Anthony Davis and all them. So yeah, let's throw her under the bus.
Again, talking about her, being dismissed and everything else that goes along with that, and then the reasoning for it is a little far fetched to connect to when the Clippers and the Phoenix Suns decided to start the Western Conference Finals. I'm sorry, that one's a little too far fetched, a little too far out there to actually find any connection whatsoever.
Well, it's a bowl game swag bag. You open it up, sometimes you get a T-shirt, sometimes you get a laptop, sometimes you get like a box of granola bars. LeBron James got a swag bag. He got the trainer dismissed for the Lakers, and the Clippers made to come around back around on short rest. It feels like a little swag bag for LeBron James there. But again, I'm just throwing out
not how the bowl game swag bags work. But
how would I know? And furthermore, how would you know? You were too busy brawling in bathrooms in Scottsdale.
I was not any part of that whatsoever.
All right. Well, listen, I've been to one bowl game. It was the Papa John's Bowl. It was at Legion Field, and it was an armpit. That's about my extent of bowl games. All right, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox, this is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, NFL traditions. All right, this is a tradition. This is something that you have all grown up, you've all been used to. We're going to get to that next here on Outkick the Coverage.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
10 minutes from now here on FSR, if you've ever had a terrible excuse or a terrible lie to cover up a poor mistake that you made or a poor decision that you made, somebody in the world of sports has topped you. This is an all-timer. I cannot wait to mock it and make fun of it and ridicule it alongside with Brady Quinn coming up 10 minutes from now here on FSR. That's going to be so much fun. So
hold on. Hold on for a second. I think my Twitter account just got hacked. I'm going to have to whatever I tweeted a couple hours ago about any subject, just disregard that, Jonas. I'm going to have to change my Twitter password. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
That's concerning.
It is rich. Yeah. But we right now are kind enough to join us here as he does each week here on Outkick. It is Albert Breer. You read him on the MMQB. He's covered the NFL for a long, long time. Albert, Jonas, and Brady, thanks for hanging out with us here on a Thursday. How are you?
I'm good. I've got a bad story about my Twitter account being hacked, too. If you guys Google my name and Twitter hacked, you'll see it was, I think it was 5 years ago now. But it was me and Frank Caliendo got hacked on the same day. And it's funny in retrospect, but it wasn't funny when it happened. And my second kid was about maybe I think 36 hours old.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm sitting in the maternity ward of the hospital.
Oh,
and
geez.
You know, like my face is turning red and nobody knows why I'm going into a cold sweat. But if you guys Google it, you'll see it come up.
Oh, geez.
Oh man. I gotta be honest with you too, Albert. I think your account getting Twitter hacked is worse than Frank Caliendo, because if Frank Caliendo's gets hacked and someone tells some bad jokes, people just chalk it up and say, "Hey, off week." You're all built on accountability, and that's where it becomes an issue. Like, if people start putting stuff out there that's not true, or that could be a problem, man. That could be a big deal.
Yeah, it'd be a huge deal. But fortunately enough, I mean, I guess when you guys see what it is, if you haven't seen it already, you'll see. But fortunately enough, it was so out there that it was pretty obvious it wasn't me. But, you know, in those few minutes while it was happening – like, and you see things going up on your Twitter account and you have people texting you like, "What the hell are you doing?" And you don't have the password to your own account. It is a jarring experience.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I've been out with you at the combine, Al, bro. You're kind of a wild guy. So I know your Twitter life may be different than how you actually
are,
I'm just saying.
Again, Brady, go ahead and Google that, and you'll see just how wild things can get.
I'm just seeing the headline, and you know, now I'm very intrigued by what was going on here. I have a game. I'll just put it this way: I have a game on my my weekend overnight show called Pro Wrestler or Porn Star, where I give you a name and you have to tell me which it is. And you know, this is I just want to say you might be a candidate here based on this on this hacking. And what happened. But we would transition smoothly from all that uncomfortable conversation over to Cole Beasley, you know, continued on obviously late last week with some of the his thoughts against not getting vaccinated or whatnot. And I know that, you know, I think it was Tom Pelissero had something yesterday in which, you know, the NFLPA tried to come out. And I think you alluded to this, to where the NFLPA is getting some heat. You know, why don't you have our back in this? You know, if players aren't comfortable with it, you know, why not stand up for us a little bit?
Yeah.
Do you get the impression, though, that there are maybe more players that are on the side of Cole Beasley that maybe aren't in a spot to say something, aren't in a position to speak out again about it, that when Cole came out and made those comments and doubled down on him, that they kind of had his back privately? And have you heard from people about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes both ways, which is sort of interesting. You know, like, you guys know, like, if you go on Facebook, you see those, like, little graphics around people's avatars that says, like, "I've been vaccinated," right? Like, how many NFL players have you seen that have those? Like, none, right? Like so even the guys who believe in it, who are the early adopters, they're not like, you know, climbing up to the mountaintop either and saying anything. And Brady, you could probably relate to this. It feels like this is becoming, like, the sort of third rail issue in these locker rooms that would line up with people's money, people's religion, people's family, where you just don't touch it. You know what I mean? And so, like, I can tell you this, like, just having talked to people at the league and people at the union, you know, they really kind of, like, describe it as four subcategories of players. And what's really interesting is it sort of breaks even, right? So it's like 25, 25, 25. The first group's the early adopters. Those are the people who, I mean, didn't need to be told to get the vaccine. They were going to get it one way or the other. They believed in the science. They're going to go and do it. You had a second group, which was young players that were just going to basically do whatever they were told. And one way or another, you tell me where to go, where to be, I'm going to do it. So that's half the league, right? Then you get to a third group, and the third group is the group that's really skeptical about it, but they're worried about their careers, and reluctantly, they're all going to eventually wind up doing it because they know how much harder the 2021 season is going to be, you know, if they don't get it. And then the fourth group is this group of players just like Cole Beasley that's just not going to do it and is willing to take a stand and go in the other direction and almost the opposite of the early adopters. And so you know, in a lot of ways, I think it's, you know, it's sort of, you know, locker room again becoming like a reflection of America. Yeah, but what's, you know, interesting about it is exactly what you touched on, which is that this has sort of become this sort of third rail topic again, that religion, that money, that family is in these locker rooms, which is you can have discussions on it, but you're not going to bring it up with somebody unsolicited.
Right. And I would actually say fourth rail. I think politics are the other ones that you just you leave out as much as possible. And then this has almost become politicized a little bit. I guess my surprise is how the NFLPA worked with the NFL to come out with these rules for non-vaccinated players. And based on the reaction of Cole Beasley and Joe Mixon and some of the others who at least spoke out publicly, it seemed like it caught them off guard. I mean, it's my understanding that as much as the NFLPA wants to try to create a safe environment for all players, they also have to represent the 5 or 10% that, you know, maybe feel like they're not going to partake in this. And I think that's one of the issues that I always had as a union guy, really not being one, is I don't want to have to create rules that has to protect the 5 or 10% who can't protect themselves. Like, I'm all for accountability and responsibility. And I think in this case, they're essentially not doing that, which is – different than what they normally would do, creating most policy.
And I guess what you're pointing to, Brady, is like, well, you know, you stuck up for Aaron Hernandez when the Patriots
were
going after his bonus money.
Right.
Yeah, you stuck up for Ray Rice, you know, and like there are a ton of examples of that. Like, and that's, you know, and they've always said that that's their function, you know, is that their job is to, you know, defend all players, you know, almost regardless of what the offense is. And I think one of the biggest problems here, Brady, is the messaging. And I think if the messaging was better towards the players, they may have averted some of this, because, you know, my understanding is over the last couple of months, the negotiation here was basically zero on unvaccinated players. And the point that was made inside those rooms was the pandemic's not over, and until COVID's completely contained, we can't take the risk. We can't put our money on the line and risk having, you know, it spreading in our locker rooms, because, you know, that could cost us games, that could take money off the table, all that different stuff. And so basically inside the room, what they were saying was, we're not going to negotiate for unvaccinated players. We're going to leave the 2020 protocols in place until things change, like until like the pandemic's fully eradicated. So then they moved and they said, okay, how can we create incentives for other players to get vaccinated? And that's how they came up with the new rules for vaccinated players. Now, unfortunately, the way this thing was presented and the way it got out was, well, you know, here are two different sets of rules for two different classes of players, instead of saying, well, you know, we didn't really change anything for unvaccinated guys. We're just incentivizing guys getting vaccinated. And I don't know that that would have made any difference at all. But, you know, I do think that the messaging was a little screwed up from the beginning, where if they had gotten that out a little bit earlier and positioned it that way, maybe it would have at least softened the blow with some of the players.
I guess my biggest issue is I just don't like the fact that you need to incentivize anyone to put something into their body. And whether or not they understand the science behind it and think it's best for them, this is such an individual choice. And so I think that's the first thing that kind of bothers me about it. And the other thing is, look at the NBA right now. CP3 was vaccinated. He just had to miss how many games in the NBA playoffs? And so acting like getting vaccinated is going to solve all your issues, apparently it hasn't in the NBA. So why does the NFL think it's going to solve all their issues in regards to COVID?
I think, you know, I mean, my feeling on it is that they just feel like they're giving themselves a better chance. And that, like, what happened last year, everybody got through it. It was a really difficult season, you know, no question about it, for everyone involved. But to give themselves the best chance and to not have situations like happened you know, in the Denver quarterback room or the New Orleans running back room to avoid that. The best thing they could do is get as many players vaccinated as they possibly can. And Brady, you know this as well as I do. You know, their motivation is to protect the bottom line. They're going to protect their wallets at all costs, especially after what they went through last year. And I don't think it's any mistake that we're starting to see some of the initiatives, you know, that had been on the table and were probably 5- and 10-year projects getting fast-tracked now, right? Like, you look at, like, the combine being moved around. You look at going to Germany in 2022. All this stuff is being fast-tracked because they're trying to recover the revenue they lost last year. And, you know, I just think that every owner has in his head right now, I need full stadiums in the fall. I need a regular year revenue-wise. And the best way for that, they feel like the best way to do that is to make sure that the games are as normal as they possibly can make them. And, you know, in negotiating these things with the union, of course, like, I think that the best way for them to do that is to get as many players vaccinated as possible. It won't stop the spread completely, but it'll make it a lot less than it was last year.
Albert Breer joining us here on Fox Sports Radio from the MMQB, Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn. This is Outkick the Coverage here on FSR. And this is probably a terrible question, but since you brought it up, I'm just curious, because you mentioned, you know, fast-tracking games in Germany, you know, fast-tracking some of the other things because they're trying to recoup the revenue they lost last year. Is there a ballpark figure on how much money the league lost last year because of COVID and no fans in stadiums and all the other things that went into it? Like, have you heard a number that has been thrown out there by anybody?
Well, I wish I had a real solid number for you guys, but if you want to look at, like, how much salary cap drops, I think that was close to 10%. So, and then, you know, they're borrowing against future years, so it's at least a few billion. Now that sounds huge, of course, I mean, it's a $14 billion business annually. They just signed new television deals, so they'll be able to make it up in time. And I think assume that the business is going to keep growing, but they lost a lot of money. I mean, I had the number, and I wish I still had it, but I had the number, you know, it was something like, you know, $300 million per team lose, but in lost revenue for each team that had an empty stadium. Now, not all the teams had empty stadiums all year, but it is a massive, massive number. And they did everything they could to try to recoup as much of it as they could. But there's no question that the revenue wasn't quite the same as it had been in years past.
I mean, which teams?
And I'm sorry. I think it was around $100 billion. If you had an empty stadium, or $100 million, if you had an empty stadium, because I think the total number, if every stadium had been empty all year, the total number would have been $3 billion.
I feel so bad for these billionaires too. By the way, I just feel so bad. For I feel bad for these billionaires losing this money.
Not knowing where your next meal is going to come from, right?
Unbelievable!
Brady?
Unbelievable!
Let me tell you something. I don't care how much money you got in your back pocket. You ever step barefoot on a Lego? That bastard hurts. Oh. Okay, so listen, you know, I do feel bad.
Those are the same thing. That is an apples to apples comparison.
Damn,
that's a tremendous.
Well, Brady, if you have to cut back and only have like four maids in the house instead of three, then maybe that Lego doesn't get picked up, and that's why you stepped on it.
I got a newsflash for people. That's just a down day in the stock market for some of these guys. Okay, stock market has a 2 or 3% correction. Guess what? That's what they're losing in one day, let alone an entire season.
I do want. Under this, though, were there certain teams that were affected more than others? Like, were there certain teams that were really hampered by what happened? Obviously, you know, these guys are all are wealthy and they'll make it back, as you pointed out. But were there a couple of teams that really suffered more than other teams in the league?
Yeah, I would point, you know, immediately to the three teams that went into new stadiums that were really sort of budgeting and building towards having a huge windfall going into those stadiums. And that's obviously the two teams in L.A. and the Raiders. And I think the Raiders, you know, part of their, you know, their off season where, you know, they cut half their offensive line and you know, did a bunch of budget tightening things. You know, part of it was the salary cap, but there was a part of it that was cash too. You know, and I think the Raiders had some restrictions on what they could spend, and I think that sort of was felt across the league too. You know, I think the Chargers had some restrictions on what they could spend. You know, and I like if you look team to team. I think everyone sort of had a limit on how far they could go from a cash standpoint, and some contracts and the way that they were, you know, structured with players reflected that. And I actually think that that spilled over into the Julio thing too. And a lot of people were asking why more teams weren't interested. Well, you know, the salary cap was tighter this year, but we're also at a juncture in the off season where, you know, I think a lot of teams, you know, that might have been interested otherwise were at their budget and couldn't justify spending another $15 million on a player. And so I think that stuff was sort of felt across the NFL. And yeah, I think the teams that were in new stadiums, you know, they felt it. Teams that are in older stadiums that are a little bit more reliant, you know, like your Buffaloes that are a little bit more reliant on gate revenue, those teams, I think, had issues. You know, so again, like I'm with Brady on this. Like, I mean, I don't feel any need to hold a bake sale for these people, but you know what? but I do think that it did have like some sort. It did have some level of effect on the way teams were put together this offseason.
Hey, Albert, we're up against the break, so I got to ask you this quickly. The combine. It sounds like in 2023, yeah, it's not going to be bid. Just take me through the NFL's thought process there. Given that it's been in what? In Indy since, is it the late 80s, early 90s? And Indy does a great job, yeah, with doing it. What's the thought process behind that?
Well, the thought process is just to make money. You don't have teams to have cities. I mean, like, let's call it what it is. You know, and like having, you know, I think not only having cities bid on it, will that, not only will that have like a, you know, financial windfall for the league, but it'll also create competition and making the event bigger and better and all of that. I will say this, you know, and Brady, again, you know this because you went through it. The most important stuff at the combine is the stuff that no one sees. Right. And so part of that's the interviews, and you can do that wherever. Like, that doesn't really matter. They can make that work. The medical, though, is the one thing that I know a lot of the football ops people and the coaches are really nervous about, because Indy's done that for so long. They have it broken down to a science, and it's not easy to put, what is it, 300-some-odd players, 330, 340 players through physicals on a four-day in a four-day window. And so, you know, between, you know, the hospitals in Indianapolis and the combine people, they've got that thing wound so tight that they're able to put every single guy through every single thing that they need to put them through medically to get the answers that they need. And I think that there's a level of concern out there in the NFL that if they try to just kind of pick that part of it up, the medical part of it up, and move it somewhere else, it could wind up being a total bleep show, because Indianapolis has 35 whatever years of experience doing this. Just giving it to another city, it might not run as smoothly, because it's a very, very difficult thing to pull off.
Get him on Twitter at Albert Breer. Albert, always good stuff. We appreciate it. Thanks for getting up early and hanging out with us here on a Thursday, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Albert.
All right. Thanks, Jonas. Thanks, Brady.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Brady Quinn has identified something on the NFL calendar. He has identified this, and speaking of teases, I don't even know what it is. You have wanted to keep this a secret from me, so we will get into that in about 10 minutes from now on FSR. So, looking forward to that, Brady Quinn.
Yeah, yeah, that should be a very, very big surprise.
Yes,
and one that's probably not as big as your tease is going to make it out to be. But
well, listen, but that's what we do here. I overpromise,
oversell. Yeah. Under deliver. Yeah. Yeah. Every time.
Yep. Yeah. Story of my love life, too. All right. So here it is. The tradition in the NFL that is the combine in Indianapolis. I have a soft spot for the combine in Indianapolis because I can remember, and this is probably back when you were at the combine, when you were, for no reason whatsoever, throwing up 225 26 times or whatever it was, just because you wanted to break the all-time record set by Jay Cutler. So you thought, okay, well, watch me. You had no business doing it, but you're a meathead, and you wanted to show off what EAS has done fun for you, and so you went there, and what was it ended up being, what, 25 times you did?
No, I think it was like 24, maybe. Okay. I think I could get 25 or 26, but yeah. I wasn't training for it. But everything you said was true. Big meathead, this guy right here talking, and yeah, I got coerced into doing it because I tore my PCL and – you know, didn't want to let teams know that. So I was like, all right, this is the only thing I could do to compete. So I'll go ahead and try to throw up the bench press a little bit.
I love it. And I had no idea that Jay Cutler had the record. Like, I don't think anybody would have known that Jay Cutler had the bench record that Brady Quinn broke.
Well, the guy who knew it was this scout that was assigned to our quarterback group that was basically escorting us around, he definitely knew that he had the record because he was a Denver scout. And he kind of convinced me this would be a good idea.
Now, was that when it was at the RCA Dome? Was that where the combine was at?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that would have been at the RCA Dome at that point in time. I mean, you it's really the convention center, which I believe is connected to now Lucas Oil, but it was the RCA Dome at that point in time, yeah.
So now the NFL is starting to accept some bids on the old combine, huh? Is this the end of the combine in Indianapolis? Because if it is, this really bums me out. Because I have told you this, the fact that the Pro Bowl ever left Honolulu is a disgrace. In fact, I would argue one of the worst decisions the NFL ever made was taking the Pro Bowl away from Honolulu. And I actually, I think it's even a worse look for the NFL than the blown pass interference play in the Rams-Saints NFC title game from a couple of years ago. The fact that they took the Pro Bowl away from Honolulu, a place in which you turned it on because you saw those nice throwback a blue and red AFC versus NFC jerseys. Then you see Chris Berman walking the sidelines, drinking a Kona Big Wave and a Hawaiian shirt. It was everything you needed from an end of the season exhibition football game, only to be taken away so they could put it in Orlando and have guys play dodgeball. It's just an absolute disgrace. And now the combine's going down the same road. Now other cities can bid on it. I think this is terrible, and I feel bad for the people of Indianapolis. It's awful.
You're really trying to set yourself up for that next Hawaii vacation, aren't you?
I mean, well, you know, if our friends are listening on Fox Sports 990 in Honolulu, I just want to say hello and aloha to you and yours. Just want to give you a little shout out. Listen, you and I have done a show. I actually did a show from that station, and you were
trust me, I know. Yeah, I know. You're trying all you can, all you can, where if this whole morning thing with us doesn't work out, you're just trying all you can to get to Hawaii, where you're doing a radio show there full-time, drinking Kona beers on the beach.
I mean, if you imagine doing a show there live, at this time slot, I mean, it's 2:30 in the morning in Hawaii right now. I mean, and again, as somebody who does overnights, that is my wheelhouse, Brady Quinn. So I'm just saying, the fact that the combine's always been synonymous with Indianapolis. So now, and it's not like I'm naive enough to think this wasn't going to happen, but there's a report out that the Dallas Cowboys are expected to put a bid in. Well, if the Dallas Cowboys are putting a bid in, Brady Quinn, what does that mean? The Cowboys are getting the combine at some point.
The fact that it's even up for a bid, I think, tells you that. You know, like this whole thing, the fact that it's up for a bid tells you that Indy could maybe be in the rotation, but 2022 is probably going to be the last year because 2023 is now up for bids. If I had to give you my top three potential destinations for the NFL Combine, it would go like
this. Hold on a second. You know the rules here. Can we get some Brady Quinn traditional game show music that has nothing to do with his heritage?
Right.
Nothing to do with Brady Quinn's heritage. But and here we go. This is, again, nothing to do with Brady Quinn's heritage here. As I crack open a Guinness and put on a Conor McGregor T-shirt. So here we go, Brady Quinn. You take it away. Destinations for the Combine, according to one, Brady O'Quinn.
Okay, so we all know that, you know, when you build a new stadium, you're going to get rewarded people. That either means a Super Bowl. It could potentially mean, I don't know, maybe the draft being held there at some point in time. Or now that we've got on the docket, you know, the ability to bid for these sorts of things, generate more revenue for the NFL, the NFL Combine. And there was most recently a stadium built in Las Vegas, which I think would be, look, Las Vegas might be the mecca for conventions and people going out there to have a good time but do some work as well. Las Vegas, the Raiders hosting the NFL Combine, if it is to be starting in 2023, that would be number one on my list. I think if you want to make it an event that people during that time of year would love to go to,
oh,
anyone from a cold weather destination, they'd love to be there. It's always a good time. Las Vegas would be number one on my list as far as NFL future NFL scouting combine destinations. How about you?
That's a terrible idea. here's why it's a terrible idea. All right. Okay.
I already know where you're going. I'm going to have a rebuttal to what you're about to say.
So when you go to the combine, so the combine is what, 3-4 days?
I mean, yeah, I think it depends on the position group. It ends up being between flying in and all that stuff, about 4 days.
And the first position group to go at the combine is usually what? I was trying to think of this earlier. Is it the wide receivers? I don't think
they typically have the skill players. They typically have some of the skill players go first.
So yeah. if you're a wide receiver and you get invited to the combine in Las Vegas, and you're done with your obligations, and there's another 3 days to kill, count to 20, and one of those guys is going to be climbing up the side of the Luxor bombed. This is a horrible idea. You're going to see people lose draft stock in droves because they will not be able to control themselves, especially if it's their first time in Las Vegas. I don't know about you. First time I walked the streets of Las Vegas and somebody said, hey, you know, you can drink a beer as you walk. You could have told me that I had just landed on Mars. It was unbelievable. Couldn't grasp the idea. This feels like a terrible idea for some of these players that have never been to Vegas before, who all of a sudden have 48 to 72 hours to kill in Sin City, knowing that they just had a great workout at the combine. This feels like a bad idea.
Yeah, and this would be my response to that, knowing that that was the direction you're going to go. It's a weeding out process, bud, all right? Whether it's Indy or anywhere else, if they're going to get in trouble, okay, either before, during, or after their biggest job interview of their life, which that's what the Underwear Olympics are, okay, then they're probably going to get in trouble at some other point in time down the road. So why not put them around all of the distractions, everything else that Las Vegas has, and see who's willing to take the bait. See who's willing to make that mistake and go ahead and do something stupid, meanwhile, where you've got the biggest job interview for your life. I actually think that helps the teams do their job. So I would argue the counterpoint to all of that, but I do have a couple other destinations.
I want to get to these other destinations here. This is Brady Quinn's destinations for the NFL Scouting Combine. And we have got one down. We've got another two to go. Find out if they are coming to a city near you. That's next. Coming up 15 minutes from now here on FSR, we are going to get to something Brady Quinn has noticed with the NFL calendar. This is, according to Brady, this is going to be massive. All right, you've noticed something with the NFL calendar. Apparently nobody else has noticed. So I don't know if,
I love when you do this to me. I really do appreciate
it. Listen, you spotted something. So Danny G has sent the tweet out. I mean, everybody's going to be waiting to see what you noticed about the NFL calendar here. This is important stuff. But we have been talking about the potential of the NFL Combine leaving Indianapolis. Feels like a foregone conclusion. Brady Quinn with this, background music, this game show music that has nothing to do with his heritage. Brady O'Quinn has already named Las Vegas as a top three destination for the Scouting Combine when it does move. What are the other two?
Actually, it's not top three, bud. That's my number one. Okay.
Okay. Very good.
Go ahead and bring it out to good old Allegiant Stadium. The confines there, plenty of hotels, plenty of places for everyone to stay. And here's the deal. You know how last few years, teams have been sending less personnel and people to the combine?
Yeah.
Well, that won't be the case moving forward, buddy. Everyone will be clamoring to make sure they get to the NFL combine when it's in Las Vegas. All right. Number two on the list. You know, who doesn't need a little bit of sunshine, that time of the year, especially for those teams playing up north or in the Midwest? Why not L.A.? All right, you got SoFi right there. You just built the stadium. It's going to be able to host an Olympics or be a part of that. Obviously, L.A., I'm sure, would love to be a destination for it. And here's the other thing. It's easy for the players. A lot of them train and prepare in Southern California or Arizona or even Las Vegas. So if it's not in Las Vegas, it's a short trip to go out and be able to have the combine in L.A. I think it makes a lot of sense. And look, you got two teams who are already there, so they don't have to travel that far. The other 30 can make their way, and it's a home game for us. And so we can be a part of that, too, have a nice little setup there at the NFL Combine.
Well, okay, and again, I'm not trying to – you're delivering all the pros of each city. I would like to deliver a couple of cons. Number one, you pointed it out. They've never not been working on the freeways out here. It is astonishing. Yeah. Somebody listening right now, again, on the blowtorch, AM 570 LA Sports, I can promise you, if you are on a freeway right now, there is some sort of construction going on. And you know what I'm talking about. Lay on the horns right now, because you see there's constantly construction. They're constantly building something, or they're repairing something, or there's a pothole the size of a dumpster in the middle of the road that they've got to get worked on or fixed. So that would be my only counter to that. Traffic could be a little bit of an issue. And the last thing I want is for, you know, some of these players to show up late to their NFL combine. Terrible. Wouldn't like that, Brady Quinn.
Yeah, I think they'd be staying close enough where they really wouldn't be driving much. I mean, my experience, again, being an Indy, and that's, you know, my only experience, it's the only place the combine's really been for the past almost few decades, is you don't drive much when you're a part of the combine. So. I don't know that that's as big of a concern as you think it is.
All right. And what is number three on your list of potential destinations for the NFL?
This is a shoo-in. I mean, are you telling me you're going to have a bidding process for the NFL Scouting Combine and Jerry's World isn't going to be in play here?
Of course.
I mean, come on. It's the Dallas Cowboys. Every time something like this comes up for bid or comes up in conversation, Jerry Jones has something to do with it. If you haven't been down, by the way, to see a game in Jerry's World, that entire stadium, that AT&T, it could probably literally handle all of the outfits or operations that are needed for these athletes. But even if not there, their practice facility. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys practice facility is second to none when you look at their setup. So they would have the infrastructure. Dallas is another place that hosts a lot of conventions, a ton of hotels, ton of chances to be able to have people fly down there relatively easy that time of year. The Dallas Cowboys, or the city of Dallas, would be number three on that list as far as destinations. It's kind of centrally located, too, in the country. A little easier for everyone to get to. So I think Dallas makes a lot of sense in my mind.
Okay, if you had to place a wager, all right, on which city not named Indianapolis that gets the combine first, I would put everything I own on the Dallas Cowboys. Like, I would lay everything on the city of Dallas getting it first. Dallas or L.A.? Just because, although L.A., you know, L.A.'s getting the Super Bowl next year, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so this upcoming Super Bowl is in L.A. I would think that the Dallas would be the first team to get the NFL scouting combine. I think that would be the first team to get it.
They do have a lot of sway. Yes. Although, for our purposes, I do think Las Vegas would be the most fun. A home game for us in L.A. would be second. And then Dallas. Dallas is a good time. But I'm more speaking from our selfish, personal perspective of trying to have some fun at the combine. Because what people don't really realize is, as much as it's about, and we talked to Albert Breer in the first hour about this, the medical, the stuff that you don't see, the interviews behind the scenes, the coaches, the general managers, the people who go behind the scenes, they get absolutely hammered, okay? It is a big party, and that's why it'll be a little sad for the St. Elmo's or Prime 47, some of the other spots that have traditional hangout spots during the course of the week there in Indianapolis. It'll be a little sad to not be all meeting up with some of the head coaches and general managers in the NFL at Steak and Shake at 4 a.m.
Man. So, there's nothing like sitting at a penny slot machine in Las Vegas, and you put in $20 and you slow play it. And then about 3 or 4 minutes into it, you just hear in the background, "Cocktails!" And you go, "Oh my God, this is only going to cost me $20. You throw the cocktail waitress an extra couple of bucks, and she starts bringing over beer after beer after beer. And it costs you $20. You play the penny slots, and you end up walking out of there with a little bit of a buzz, and then you lose your ass the rest of the trip. Like, it is, I'm telling you, man, Las Vegas is a dangerous place for people with way too much time. If they're getting in, if they're getting into the shenanigans in Indianapolis, Brady Quinn, what do you think some of these NFL personnel are going to do in Las Vegas? This is a problem, man. It's a problem.
Well, again, it's going to test out my theory theory, though, on if the player is going to get in trouble, go ahead. Feed him right to Las Vegas if he's never been before during the NFL Combine. We'll see how he conducts himself. My concern for us is more of, given the time difference, if we were doing this show throughout the course of the week, because I'll remind you, the Combine lasts for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's an early start time. And so I've got to wonder for our own well-being, are we going to be just coming in straight in from the bars or straight in from the casino? I mean, there's a decent chance that could be the case.
Well, I think that's when we would just have to, and they're not listening to this, so who cares? That's when we have to just lie to our wives and say, yeah, it turns out that we're going to have to do a Saturday and Sunday show too. Can you believe it? Yeah, why are you still up at 6 a.m.? Just got off work. Yeah, why is there drool on your shirt? I don't know. That had a little bit of an issue. But that'll be the first lies told in our marriages, I believe.
I can't speak for you, but I know for me,
Totally. Yeah. All right. By the way, developing situation here. Bobby tweets in and says that, quote, you can drink a beer on the streets in Indianapolis, too, that there's an open container law there.
That's a great point. But let me. It was a Bobby.
Everything.
Was Bobby the name? Okay.
Yes.
Hey, Bobby. I'm not sure if you've been in Indianapolis in February. Not too many people are outside drinking. Okay. If you are, you're probably wearing some sort of parka that's layered with about four other layers of clothing on. Given why there's so many, inside, tunnels and hallways leading you to everything, because no one's sitting outside enjoying an adult beverage in February in Indianapolis.
Well, I mean, listen, at least the option is there. If for whatever reason you had to, at least the option's there, according to Bobby. But we appreciate the feedback. It's good to know that people are on the lookout for us when we break down these conversations, because, God knows we didn't research it. All right, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox, this is Outkick the Coverage here on FSR. Coming up next, the NFL calendar has got a little bit of a quirk, something different, something unique. We'll get into all of that for you next here. It's Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.